My Radio 1. Sean Daly. With Sean Daly.
From its launch in 1967, right through the 70s and 80s, BBC Radio 1 was probably the world's biggest music station. In this series, I'm introducing you to many of the people behind the network's success during those golden years, as they each tell the story of their Radio 1.
Sean Daly. My Radio 1.
Oh my goodness me, what about this for an opener?
Valentine's Day, good morning. Thursday, lots and lots of messages from loved ones to you coming up in a moment. Here's Shaking Stevens, so where's the monkey?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what's happened to the monkey, but I can tell you that my friend Adrian John has returned to BBC Broadcasting House for My Radio 1.
Sean, what a privilege. The place hasn't changed a lot. It's cooler. It's cooler than the old studios used to be, although they weren't bad at that time.
As we speak to you now, thank goodness, the air conditioning is in full effect. So, Adrian, long before you took up a broadcasting career yourself, who were your heroes when you were listening to the radio?
I think I was very inspired by people like Stuart Henry.
Once again, I'm sitting in a little studio in London, ready for the next 60 minutes to produce all good sounds. I am feeling fantastic today. I trust everybody's feeling happy. Tell you what, if you're feeling happy, give me a little laugh, will you?
There was this overwhelming energy, gushing. There was obviously people like Freeman, Alan Freeman.
Down at number six, Question the Moody Blues. Down at five, Honey, Come Back from Glen Campbell. Up to number four this week, Grooving with Mr. Blow. Right, Mr. Blow. Down at number three, Back Home, the England football squad. Down at number two, Yellow River from Christie. And the brand new number one, In the Summertime, Mungo Jerry. We'll see you next Sunday at five. All right. Interrupt.
People who had a presence, and that's something that's difficult to give a presenter. Yeah, they had it. Each had it. It's almost like the BBC went round unconsciously saying, we've got to find people with a presence on air. There was an atmosphere about these people, and I was inspired by so many different people. In fact, that question was asked to me when I first went to Radio 1. They said, you know, who do you like on the station? And I said, well, there's a little bit about everybody that I like. My task is to learn how these people managed to do so well and get successful. What was it in their presentation? What was it in their personality? And learn from all of them.
Well, let's talk about you starting at Radio 1, because that was a long time before you got given your own programme. 1978, making all the trailers. How did you manage to work your way in?
Well, the very first introduction to Radio 1 was rather sensational, because I was out in the world being very busy as a DJ. I was already doing a lot of gig work. I was actually only working down the road from Radio 1. I was working in Oxford Circus.
In a
Top Shop Oxford Circus. It was half disco, half radio, you know, but it was a lot of fun anyway. And one day, a lady came into my studio in Oxford Circus, and she said, Adrian John. I said, yes. She said, you don't know me. I'm Doreen Davis, Radio 1. And she said, yep, you know, I heard all about you. I've heard what you're doing in the store here. You'll be hearing from us.
Really?
Yeah, it was just like
that. That's the stuff that dreams are made of.
Yeah, and I think what it tracks back to is the very fabulous Peter Powell, who became aware of me doing promotions around the country. And I think he actually said to Radio 1, you know, you have to listen to this guy. I mean, what a generous thing to do. And that he saw that potential. Forever grateful.
Typical of Peter as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So supportive to so many of us.
Absolutely. And I found that that was very true of Peter. And actually quite a lot of people there as well. But Peter particularly did me a favour by doing that. I don't know whether Doreen would have been going into Topshop for her clothes had I not been there. But I'm ever so glad she did.
Two great Radio 1 discos are coming up soon. They're on Tuesday the 14th of March at Tiffany's in Glasgow and Wednesday the 15th of March at Tiffany's in Edinburgh. Noel Edmonds, Paul Burnett, Tony Blackburn, Simon Bates, Keith Jensen and Dave Lee Travis with a special appearance on Tuesday by Peter Powell. All on stage to give you the evening of your lives. So if you're over 18, nip along to Tiffany's in Glasgow and Tiffany's in Edinburgh and grab a ticket at only £1.50 and it all goes for charity.
Radio 1. Where would you make those trailers? Was it down in the pit?
Yeah, it was a little pit at the bottom of Egdon House. You could actually get into Egdon House by a little corridor that was sort of beneath the road. And I could get in there from two different directions. But I think, if I'm right, I hope I don't upset anybody, there was a really great guy called Phil there. And I could go to Phil and say, Phil, I've just been thinking for a week about a trail. And what I want to do is this, this and this. I want some sound effect there of this. I want that to go on. I want to put on this voice here. I want to put this bit of music. And Phil, without the aid of computers to get all these sound pieces, would just magically construct this in front of me. And I'd get the credit for it. But really, he was so good at pulling it all together.
Sunday, kids' mailbag. Tuesday, the featured interview and the new top 30. Wednesday, staying alive and girl talk. Thursday, meet a sportsman and the new album chart. Friday, the round table with star guests reviewing the latest releases, all tucked into a bed of the finest music around. Kid Jensen, the complete programme, Monday to Friday at 4:30 on Radio 1.
You were gradually given a little more on-air responsibility, like reading the traffic news during the roadshow. That must have been a thrill too.
Yes, it was. I think the very first traffic flash I did was quite a shock for me because I'd obviously prepared what I would do in the event of a traffic flash, but I didn't know what effect it was going to have on me. And I just remember holding onto the desk for dear life as I was doing this. Remember, this was a dream come true. And then it all went perfectly, said the right words in the right places, finished the traffic flash. And then the engineer sitting through the window said to me, Adrian, I said, yeah. He said, you've gone white. And I said, I think I'm going to go to the toilet.
Yeah.
I was so shocked.
We're going to break for the music just for a moment, and we're going to go back to London. Adrian John has a motoring flash for us. Good afternoon, Adrian.
Traffic. Hi, Tony. From Radio 1. Thank you very much. We have two messages affecting motoring problems, one on the M4 in Wales and the other on the M6 in Staffordshire. Traffic is being held up for periods of 1 hour or more on the M4 in South Wales at the approaches to Junction 26, the turn-off to Newport, because of extensive road reconstruction. To save delays, turn off from junctions 25 or 27 and travel via Newport and avoid this part of the M4.
And you got your first taste of TV at this time. You were a roving reporter on the revamped Jukebox Jury, hosted by Noel Edmonds, who must have been, again, one of those Radio 1 heroes that you aspired to.
Huge, huge. And to be on the same programme as him, I was totally phased by meeting him.
How did that come about?
Well, I was just contacted, I think, via somebody at Radio 1, one of the senior producers, and said, I've given your name to the producer at the time. And, yeah, they're going to get in touch with you because they're considering you for this programme. So they met me and they worked out.
Saturday tea time.
I know.
Big audience.
To see myself on there was quite a treat.
Right, well, they all seem quite clear of the fact that ABBA's not really up to it. We went out and about to ask a few members of the public what they thought. I mean, Adrian grabs you. Well, he really does grab you.
Hello. Thank you for volunteering.
Volunteering. I was dragged out of the apartment.
Like that record?
I thought it was pretty boring, really.
Smart, isn't it? Decent.
You like that type of music?
Yeah, it's sort of a change for the old funky sort of music, isn't it?
And then at the end of the series, I think the final edition, I think before it stopped, I was then in the studio with Noel as well and did a couple of contributions there. So it was a great bit of TV experience. Again, way above my head. I didn't really think in the right way. Looking back on it, I hadn't really found out who I was, so it was all rather frenetic.
Saturday morning. morning. It's okay. Starting up in your favourite way. Music, weather, traffic too, with a hot chop off or an old boogaloo. Disco jive or fans of rock to make their day start right. Wake up to the weekend, 7 a.m. So set those clocks tonight, all right.
Eventually, in 1982, you finally got your own Saturday show, Wake Up to the Weekend. What are your memories of that and working with the lovely Roger Pusey as producer?
You know, they were blessed at Radio 1 for having producers who'd had a lot of experience of life. They'd done all sorts of things. I mean, some of them had probably been in the war. But they'd developed this wonderful knowledge of music, of bands, of timing, of tempo, and little terminology like scat singing, and that they knew all the bits and pieces about music. So they'd analyse the song very well. A new song coming out, they would listen to it, and they'd listen to it not only from its appeal from a pop sense, but also its construction. And I've learned so much from them, and I didn't find that at any time producers ever became an obstacle to my presenting. All they ever did was give me a benefit, and Roger Pusey was just a lovely, lovely guy. He used to listen to me, he used to tell me if it wasn't going down too well, but he used to do it in such a gentle, kind way, which was quite important with me at that time. And he would then just suggest things, and then he would tell me about things I'd done that he really liked. And it was a kind of coaching that I imagine that the BBC must have been really good at, working with artists and helping them through, particularly these early stages as they were building their confidence.
Quick, give him another injection.
It's not working, Doctor.
Try the bell, try the bell. Quick then, blow into this bag. More, more. Right, now burst it.
Still asleep, Doctor.
Wait, I have another idea. It's our last hope. Switch on the radio. Tune it in, tune it in.
It's Adrian John here again with Wake Up to the Weekend.
Because it's working. He's waking up. He's waking up.
Oh, when all else fails, wake up to the weekend at 6 o'clock tomorrow.
The bulk of the country will have a bright, dry day with good sunny spells. Some showers likely, however, mainly near northern and western coasts. They should generally die out from the south, most places remaining dry today. Clear skies overnight, and Northern Ireland and western Scotland will have increasing winds, but bringing cloud and some rain by the morning. Temperatures similar to yesterday, ground frost in most inland districts at first this morning. Watch out for the slippery bits. Could be confined to England and Wales by tonight, though.
Radio 1. Good morning.
And it was kind of like a best of Radio 1, wasn't it? The highlights of the week for that hour.
Yeah, it started like that. There used to be little voice pieces from many other presenters going out initially. I think in time we started to drop that a little bit and just have a lot of fun with stories about the week.
There's a story about three fed-up anglers who were packing up. They said, no, we've had enough. We've been here all day and all we've caught is a cold. So what we're doing is we're clearing off. Now, what happened then is all of a sudden, out of the sky, a live 2-pound perch fell right almost into one of the nets that was sitting there. And they looked up and there was an osprey flying over the top. This is on Loch Lomond. And this osprey had just dropped this fish right into their laps. Lucky for them. Poor old fish, though. Could have made it to water. Oh, it would have been eaten up now. Here's something soft and relaxing for you if you want to put your radio up nice and loud. Enjoy Chicago. Hard to say I'm sorry.
Adrian Jones! Good morning!
There's no stopping you after that as you rose to the A-Team, taking over the weekday early show, a programme that you became totally synonymous with.
I became part of the Radio 1 family, and it was a good start to the day. I think one of the reasons it was a good start to the day is my enthusiasm was abundant. I just so much wanted to do this well, but I enjoyed it. I was given quite a lot of freedom on the music, and that made it extra good for me because I'd always been a music person myself. I loved my music, and I was getting lots of opportunity to express that through the radio program. And I also felt a strong connection to the public. I mean, they wrote in by their thousands to all the programmes, but also to mine, you know, so which made me crucially aware how many people were up. And I felt the connection. If I was speaking to someone in Derbyshire who was working in a newsagent's at 4 a.m. getting the papers in, and, you know, I felt like I was in that shop with them. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was a tremendous connection. I think I connected more with people through radio than perhaps I had been doing in real life.
That's it. There's more news on Radio 1 at 7:30. Thanks a lot, Simon. It's 28 minutes to 7.
Now it's Adrian 1 here on Radio John. That doesn't sound right. Is it John Radio or 1 Adrian? No, that still isn't right. It's so hard to be clear when your brain's out of gear. But whoever he is, he's all right. I know it's Adrian John and it's Radio 1. Now that sounds all right. Radio 1.
Having worked and socialised with both you and Mike Reed together very closely, this was the start, wasn't it, of a friendship that you still have to this day, and that all began with him following you each day with The Breakfast Show.
Yes, it's really strange. Mike's got quite an aura around him. He's never short of words, and he's got a wonderful library of interest that makes him quite formidable. And something happened with Mike where he and I got together, and I used to sometimes just sit in the program with him in the morning when he was doing his show. And we just kind of started to work really well side by side. I would sometimes throw in an idea, just talk about it as a topic, and he would run with it and put it on air straight away. And he seemed to like having me there.
Alison Hartman, good morning to you in Rogwater in Watchet in Somerset. Should you kindly write out my Hamlet request since that day, no sweatshirt sent? I beg, I plead, I grovel, I politely suggest. Someone's forgotten my sweatshirt, the size of a tent. Alison, when I find one that big, we'll put one in the post here. You can have Aid the Shades, his is fairly large.
In the first couple of years of you hosting the early show, talking about legendary old BBC producers, it was Ron Belshay who was overseeing you. And then when he retired, Sue Foster took over for a while before Mick Vilcoich was parachuted in, not only to watch over you, but the transition between the two mics, Reed to Smith.
Sue Foster, you mentioned just, oh, you couldn't wish for more, you know, someone who'd just let you be creative and just be around you and try and support you and allow you to have that space to develop what you're doing. Mick Vilcoich, just a most tremendous, energetic man to have around in production terms. And Mike Smith came along.
Well, here we are again. Back to work and Mike Smith ready to go at 7 o'clock.
Hello! Hello!
Across the UK, Britain's favourite Radio 1.
I was just thinking about how nice it must be for you to come to work on these Monday mornings and come back to civilisation.
It's quite nice, actually, Mike. I must say, you sort of miss it after a week, and it's nice to be back in the chair playing all the records.
I know you'd have been missing those early morning handovers with Reedy, but how did you get on with Smithy?
At first, I didn't feel there was a kind of a real warmth between us, but I used to sit there doing the early show, and Mike used to do breakfast, and then bit by bit, we used to talk quite a lot, and Mike would sometimes share his problems with me, little difficulties about this, that, or the other, or something he wanted to tell me, and I would do the same with him. And I always felt he was such a busy guy, had so much going on, so many strings to his bow, that I didn't really have as much time with him as I would have liked to have had. But the time I do have, I remember him as being incredibly engaging and really friendly and warm towards me.
On the Radio 1 Red Show, and what we heard just before the news was Douglas Duck, The Adventures of Douglas Duck, who's the football fan, slightly later today than it was another week, so if you thought you missed it, you're in good luck you haven't. We're now going to go on to the second contestant to take part. His name is Mark Marley.
And years after reading out the traffic news in so many of them, in the mid-1980s, you were finally let loose yourself on stage of the truly iconic Radio 1 Road Show. Happy memories of Smiley Marley and the gang?
Well, I used to listen to the Radio 1 Road Show, and I was in awe of it, and another fantastic thing, all these people, the crowd, the noises that we used to hear on the radio. And so you can imagine how excited I was when they said, you're going to have your own week. on the Radio 1
Radio
Show.
It's a good first week as well on the South Coast.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. You know, it's different. You're received in different ways around the country, as any entertainer will tell you. But we got a good reception pretty well everywhere.
I'm now away from the stage. I'm now sitting right at the front with a cross-section of people, because who comes to a Radio 1 Roadshow? Well, for a start, it's the opportunity for me to meet, as well as for you to meet, I suppose, the DJ who you listen to all the time. You often think, all right, what does that person really look like? I mean, maybe we've seen photographs, but what do they look like close up? I mean, for a start, look at the knees. How do you find the knees? Extremely white still. In spite of all this sunshine, I'm still finding my legs are remaining incredibly white, and I'm proud of that.
You know what was really good for me? Because that was me being aid the jock out on the stage, and I'd done a lot of that before Radio 1. I was doing gigs all over the place. I was doing a lot of major London events. I was in Berkeley Square doing a big ball there. I was working for People in Society. I did two private gigs with Elton John. I was used to being on stages. I'd be at the Lyceum in the Strand to a couple of thousand people. So put me on a stage and I just start to go a bit mad, and I love it. You know, it really released me and it added something to me. It helped me to endure, if you like, the very early mornings, which is quite grueling, and to be able to be lifted by the thought, oh, I got the road show coming up before long and I'll be out for the week, and that'll be good fun. And what a team, you know, Smiley Marley and the team with this amazing setup. There was nothing like it. One of the disappointments when I did eventually leave Radio 1 was I went to a radio station and I went along to the road show that they put on, and my heart sank when I saw the scale of it compared to what we'd done at Radio 1. And it made me realise, my gosh, I took that for granted. What a tremendous show it was and how well organised.
Let joy be unconfined. Let her go. From Monday, April the 3rd, Radio 1 will be opening up for business at the new earlier time of 5 a.m. So, instead of waking up to... Or you could have this. I'm Adrian John with the very latest music, travel, weather, and world news. Monday to Friday mornings, starting April the 3rd, 5 at 5.
During the second half of the 1980s, the early show is now kickstarting at 5 a.m. every day. And after making a few guest appearances on anniversary editions of Top of the Pops, you finally officially joined the roster, if you like. But I think it's safe to say that you found it rather terrifying.
I would go into the dressing room and I would just have this terrible pain in my stomach. This was so big. I went out there and I couldn't control the adrenaline. You know, a virtuoso performers in orchestras, they'll have some kind of beta blocker or something to calm them down when they're doing this solo. And that's what I don't say I need it. I mean, it's obviously better ways perhaps than using that kind of thing. But I definitely was nervous. And I think it came across. I didn't understand the science of TV. I didn't understand the magic of how you become a relaxed performer. I never had enough of it to do that. But to be able to say I was on Top of the Pops on a number of occasions is just tremendous.
Meanwhile, at 29 is a new entry from Magnum, Sweet Talking Love, and here they are.
You talked about enduring, but how did you find the management structure at Radio 1? Because there were quite a few chiefs.
Yes, there were. You know how that affected me initially? It was quite fun. In the early days, when I was just starting out doing the early show, and I was doing sort of 5 days a week, I would walk down the corridor and my producers would say to me, oh, by the way, I heard this morning, that was very good, very good, like that, that was good. I'd get a little bit further down the corridor and there'd be an executive producer coming up and he'd say, I heard you this morning, you're talking too fast, you need to slow down, yeah? And then I'd walk a little bit further up the corridor and there'd be another executive producer saying, I heard you this morning, you're talking too slow, you need to speed up, yeah? So I had all these voices in my head when I went on air about I should be doing this or that or the other, which is no good. And the guy who saved me from that, and I'll always thank him for it, is Steve Wright. Because I said to Steve, I've got these voices and they're telling me to do different things when I'm on air. He said, you've got to get that out of your head. He said, you've got to completely switch off to all the advice you're getting and you have to be totally single-minded and just do what you believe in and don't listen to it. So that smacks of arrogance. But, you know, Steve is a professional person and what he taught me is to be mildly arrogant but professional about it. So you wouldn't give up on your dream. And you try and find a way of getting it in anyway. And you wouldn't necessarily want to listen to any one person, more make an average of a consensus of what people were saying.
And these are the deputies. We're not even talking about the controller, who, when you started, was Derek Chinnery.
Oh, gosh, I was so terrified of him. Just as if he could just click his fingers and have me dragged out the building. And he looked so daunting. He was tall. He was slim. He had his hands behind his back as he walked along. And I spent the entire time at Radio 1 being frightened of him. But I always used to say hello to him, and I always used to show regard for him. And I didn't know until he resigned quite how much he liked me, you know, as a presenter and as a person. Johnny Beerling came along. He was so for the station. Now, he wasn't for the station in a way saying, look at you lot, you're useless, you should be trying harder. He would say quite the reverse. He'd say, you people are absolutely at the heart of it all. You are stars in the eyes of the public. You really are. And don't underestimate what you can do. He was bigging us up. This is how I saw him anyway. He so loved the station. He was so proud of the station that it absolutely inspired pride in me, and I'm sure other people as well.
Adrian John, Radio 1, the early show.
Those very early morning starts even became life-threatening when you famously braved the harsh winter of 1987 to try and get into London for your programme. Now, you were in Sevenoaks then, weren't you?
Yeah.
One Oak, as they famously called it in one newspaper.
It was the 15th, 16th of October.
Still remember the date?
1987. I'll never forget it. I was nearly killed. What happened was I was in bed having to, as usual, get up very early in the morning. And I thought, what's going on? This noise. And then I thought, oh dear, a spaceship's landed. Because all I could see coming through the window was this light getting bright and then fading away and then light and fading away. And you know what that was? That was a power station transformer across the road.
Jeez.
Melting down because it had so many trees fall on it.
Yeah.
And there were, and the wrenching, there was this noise, this tearing. And of course, I didn't have in my mind, this is a hurricane. I thought, actually, I hadn't lived there for very long in this location in Sevenoaks. And I thought, oh, this must happen here regularly. You know, so I get out of bed and, oh, God, I opened the front door and the door, I couldn't close it again. The wind was pushing through and I shut it and I thought I could smell the sea. And this is miles from the sea. And, yeah, so all of a sudden, all the lights went off in the house. I thought, oh, we've got a problem here. I better phone Radio 1. Well, I know, I've got my mobile phone. There wasn't a lot of them around then.
No.
And I had one of these big ones, big land ones. I know, I'll call them on the way. I tucked it in the car, drove out, turned right into the woods. That was it. There was trees right across the road.
Yeah.
And it's a narrow road. And, of course, it had been raining as well. So what I did is I reversed and my rear wheels went down into the mud as I did a turn. And then a tree came to the left of me. So I was now hemmed in by trees. And then all I could think was, if I stay here, I'm going to die because there's lots of other trees to come down. So I fortunately had a big torch. It was either carry the big torch or the telephone. And I carried the big torch and over the trees I jumped, looking all around me, shining the torch up into the air to see if any trees were going to hit me. And they went down the driveway of my place when I got there, flat against the wall while I looked in my pocket for the key, got inside and then realised all the phones were off at that point. That's when I discovered it. So what I did is I got a battery out of the burglar alarm. I connected, got some wires together. All this is all by torchlight, and connected it to an old CB unit that I had, and then I got the TV aerial from the house, and then put that in the aerial output of the CB unit.
Right.
Yeah, and I got on this thing and saying, "Hello, hello, can anybody hear me? Can anybody hear me?" And there was a guy about 4 miles away. He was on the A21 road, and he was driving a truck. And I said, oh, hello, my name's Adrian John. I work on Radio 1. And, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I've got a terrible problem. Are you getting the bad weather there? He said, yeah, yeah, it's terrible. There's trees down and everything. I said, well, I've got to get a message to Radio 1. I've got to let them know. I've got to get through to the duty manager and tell them what's happening. And he said, well, you're not going to believe this. I'm near the lay-by on the A21. There's a phone booth there. So he called the Radio 1 duty office, told them the story, and then I, when Radio 1 started, heard Mike Smith come on, who managed to get in for the start of the program. And Mike Smith said, we've had this curious message from, supposedly from Adrian John, that he's got stuck in the woods. And that was it. You know, that was the night I nearly got killed. And I couldn't go near trees probably for about a year afterwards. I was frightened of trees.
I can completely understand that. Mm. And it was such a big deal in those days. You were in all the newspapers.
Yeah, that's right. I remember one particular piece in the Daily Telegraph. I think they had a photograph of my car, how they'd found it in the middle of the woods. And everyone said, you know, we don't know what happened to him. And
people, little did they know.
When the neighbours found the car, they were looking for my body around. You know, it was that bad. Yeah, I'll never forget it.
Actually, a home. It's a bad situation. We got the power back on about Monday or Tuesday, so that was quite nice, because when you got the power on, you can have heat as well. Phone is still not working. That does surprise me. The water board, of course, were the first in there. They got that sorted out. The electricity board did their job, as I say, this week or last week. And telephone, still no hope of that, they reckon, for another couple of weeks yet. Mind you, don't miss it a lot. Think of all the money I'll be saving. Tremendous. 7 minutes to 6.
By the late 80s, I think it's fair to say that you were starting to feel a little bit shackled in that early slot. Now, you touched on this briefly earlier on about when you did leave the network, moving to a local commercial radio station, and your heart sinking, the disappointment that you felt when you saw their outside broadcast unit compared to the Radio 1 Roadshow. Mm. But it had got to the stage when you needed to move on.
Yes. I mean, I was already feeling that I wanted to get into a different show and I wanted to express myself differently. And one thing I particularly wanted to do was do more phone-in work. I think there was a side of me that wanted to communicate with people more through that way. And, you know, just reflecting on it for this program, Sean, it's quite interesting what it's brought up. And one thing I realise now that I hadn't realised before is that only a very few months before I quit Radio 1, Ray Moore, my very good friend on Radio 2, died. So I was in mourning. I love that guy. Mm. You know, we were really close. Oh, I'm going to well up to saying it. We were really close friends.
It's 23 minutes past six. It's all a bit of a tarradiddle, really, here at the BBC in the early mornings. I mean, you've got lots of things to contend with. I mean, if you're fed up with me, nobody would blame you. There's Adrian John, for instance, on Radio 1. I wouldn't like to meet him up a dark alley on a foggy night either, so I wouldn't bother.
I used to drive him in to hit his Radio 2 programme in the morning, and I used to do my programme. And
wow.
Occasionally I'd go back and I'd spend weekends with him. And he was the most kind person. He was the most warm person. I'd never had so much positive regard from anybody in my life.
What a broadcaster.
Yeah. And I thought, you know, what's life about? What am I doing here? Well, you know, I've got a little boy now, a gorgeous boy, Daniel. And I'm missing him. You know, I want to be with him. I was doing the program, and I was thinking I shouldn't be here. So I had to leave.
I'm leaving today. On Monday morning, they're changing all the locks in the building. I mean, this is unbelievable. They have this very expensive security system where you have to put cards through, and they're dispensing with that, and they're now having some magnetic thing that you put in your underpants, and you sway your hip towards the door, and the door opens magically, and I won't have one of those. Obviously, it was time to come.
You're out.
I'm out, boy. I think it's very bad. Okay, then, I won't see you Monday morning. You'll see Simon in just a moment, unless I can nick some of his breakfast show. The time is 6:30-ish. Friday morning, 29th September. Rod McKenzie reporting.
Adrian, as ever, it's so good to see you. We go back a very long time, and finally I've managed to get you into Broadcasting House to share your Radio 1 story with us. And looking back on all those years, you must feel exceedingly proud.
On the day I left Radio 1, obviously I gave notice in a proper way, and there was a big thing in the Sun newspaper at that time, in the Bazaar column, which said, the first big defection from Radio 1. Well, it wasn't a defection for any negative reasons about the station at all. And what happened on my final day, they said, could you come along to Broadcasting House across the road there because, you know, something going on. And I went in this room and it was full of Radio 1 staff of every type. Presenters, the secretaries, the management, people from studios, technical people. I didn't know how to take that because it's, I know it's a strange thing to say. I think I'm much more in touch with life now and the responsibilities of how we work in relationships, but I didn't know that then. And I didn't know people like me. I knew that the audiences liked me, and I knew that Adrian John, that creation that I'd become, was popular within the context of that programme and in other areas of Radio 1. But I didn't really know that on a one-to-one basis. So it was such a surprise to see people had gone to such effort to come in at that time in the morning when their day didn't start for hours later. And that was very moving. I was lost for words, didn't really know what to say.